discussion with third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So yesterday we discussed about how even if Arjuna wants to perform karma kanda because he feels that he is not qualified for karma yoga, still he has to fight because that is his duty. So the system of cosmic cooperation through the cycle of karma and yajna from our side and parjanya and anna from the side of the Supreme Lord through his representatives was the discussion yesterday. Now today Krishna will address another objection that might possibly be there in Arjuna's mind. If Arjuna feels that he is actually qualified not just for karma yoga but for jnana yoga, so that's Krishna will address from 2.17 onwards. Let us recite together.
यस्त्वात्मरतिरेवस्यादात्मतृप्तश्च मानवः आत्मन्येव च सन्तुष्टस्तस्य कार्यं न विद्यते.
The whole concept of duty is to some extent alien to the modern psyche, because modern psyche just talks about rights. This is what I want. This is what I want. You know, the modern or the modern generation is characterized by what is called as obsessive individualism. You know, I first and I only. One of the characteristics of any decent human culture is that the individual moves from me to we. He moves from a consciousness of me to we. So to some extent, yesterday we were discussing about the bridge of yajna. So that is also for this purpose, to move from me to we, from selfishness to selflessness. Now, even if one is a part of an ordinary family, there also there is some movement from me to we. Because one has to care not just for one's own senses, but for one's parents, one's spouse, one's children. And that also engenders some amount of selflessness. Although that is extended selfishness in one sense. So, in one sense, we can say this journey from me to we, the we keeps changing as one advances. For a gross materialist like we have in modern times, now there is no we. We is only me. But for a little more religious materialists, it is important to actually perform one's duties to one's families. You know, we cannot just neglect that out of irresponsibility. That is condemned in the Vedic literature. So that engenders some selflessness. Then when that we expands further, then there is something which is called as lokahit. Lokahit means not just the well-being of my family, but the well-being of all of humanity. In between there might be some intermediates like Rashtrahit or Jatihit or Prantahit or whatever, all these movements are there. But it's basically an extension of the circle. Then, higher than Lokahit is also Sarvabhutahit. Like in this chapter, in next chapter, fifth chapter, we'll see Sarvabhutahite Rataha. The spiritualist is engaged not just in the well-being of all human beings. Loka generally refers to human beings. Sarvabhuta means all living beings. And even if we want to do the good of all living beings, it is very difficult to do that unless we serve the Lord. Because it's like trying to water the leaf, water every single leaf of the tree. If you water the root, then automatically the leaves get watered. So now, here Krishna is talking about the concept of being free from duty. Such a person has no duty. Now, we may wonder, why should we have any duty to anyone else? In a practical sense, you know, because we take from others, we have to give to others. So, because our very existence depends on others, so we also have to do something for others. Just like, you know, if a milkman comes and gives milk to us, then if he is doing his duty, then we have to do our duty of paying him. Similarly, with respect to every other interaction, if we are taking someone from someone, and we think that it is my right to take it from that person, then it is all of that person also has a right to expect something from us, and what he expects from us becomes our duty. So Krishna says, if you don't expect anything from anyone, then you don't have any duty. So if you are self-satisfied, Atmaratireva, Krishna, to emphasize this point again, he uses three words. Yastu Atmaratireva Syad, one who is attached. We have this word Rati coming in the Guru Puja. Shri Guru Charane Rati. Rati is almost like it's very strong love. So it's like a boy has a love for a girl, like that. So one whose love is for the soul. And Atma Truptascha Manava. So one who is satisfied, Trupti. And who is Santushta. So Trupta and Santushta more or less mean the same thing. Krishna is using the same theme through different words, using different words to convey the same theme, to emphasize that only when one is self-satisfied, then one can claim that I have no duties. So, when actually, in one sense, in the society, there is this idea that you should practice spiritual life after you have completed all your worldly duties. In one sense, it is correct. If practicing spiritual life means just taking care of one's own self-realization and renouncing to the world, not wanting to do any good to anyone else, then yes, when one has come to this, when one does not expect any emotional support from others, one does not expect anything from anyone else, one has done one's duty, then one can practice spiritual life. So that is not bhakti, that is jnana. When we are practicing spiritual life, actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, while describing the sannyas of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his book, The Life and Precepts of Lord Chaitanya, says that he gave up his family to become a citizen of the whole world. So citizen of the whole world, where the whole world becomes his family and he wants to do good to the whole global family. So in that sense, even a sannyasi has duties. Because the sannyasi is taking honor and food and other things from society, then he also has an obligation. That's why, you know, when somebody is in a renounced order, generally those who are householders think that it is our duty to feed the renounced order. So that is their duty. But the renounced order should not think that it is our duty to be fed. They should think our duty is to speak. So their duty is to speak, and through speaking, they remind in the 11th canto, there's a very beautiful verse in the Pururava section where Lord Krishna is telling Uddhava in that Aila Gita that actually the words that come from the mouth of a sadhu are like the swords which cut off our material attachments. And these material attachments cannot be cut off by any other means. So the whole society is based on the principle of interdependence. You know, we have these two paradigms, dependence and independence. So dependence means, you know, we cannot live without others. Somebody else always has to ratify what I am doing. You know, if I do this, oh, will this person be happy? I mean, this is material I am talking about. You know, people are very emotionally dependent on others. So the other extreme is independence. I don't care for anything, whatever anyone does, thinks or does. I am just going to be what I am going to be. But actual society is based on interdependence. So Krishna is actually talking about a most hypothetical situation where somebody is so self-satisfied that doesn't need anything from anyone. So then to emphasize this point more, Krishna elaborates in the next verse. Naiva tasya krute nartho na krute neha kashchana na kashchit sarva bhuteshu chit artha vyapashrayah na chaiva sarva bhuteshu. Yes. So, now Krishna is still hinting about what he is going to say. Why? Because he is self-satisfied, for him it doesn't matter whether he does his duty or he does not do his duty. And then, because it doesn't matter for him whether he does do his duty also, Krishna will take that point forward in the next verses. But he emphasizes that na chaiva sarva bhuteshu kashchit artha vyapashraya. That means vyapashraya is related to the ashray, shelter. He does not have to take shelter of any living being, of course, except the Supreme Lord. So, he does not need anything from anyone else. He's self-satisfied. Then such a person can say that I don't have any duties. Because he's not in any way emotionally, physically dependent on anyone. But Krishna says, even if somebody has achieved such a situation, you know, he has, because he is detached, you know, whether he is in a jungle or whether he is in a city, it doesn't matter to him. Why? Because he is internally satisfied. You know, to the extent we have an inner life, our outer life doesn't matter to us. And to the extent we don't have an inner life, our outer life just tosses us up and down with every small change. So now to a large extent, you know, we as sadhakas have to admit that we don't have much of an inner life. And that's why our outer life is important, whether we keep ourselves in association of devotees or go into the association of karmis. And we can see our consciousness becomes different, depending on whom we are associating with and what situation we are putting ourselves in. But for a self-realized soul, when he has an inner life, he is active at the level of Atma. For us as devotees, we understand at the level of Krishna consciousness and relationship with Krishna. Here, Krishna has not yet introduced bhakti. So he is talking about Atma Truptasya Manav. Just by the knowledge of Atma Jnana, he is satisfied. So such a person, for him it doesn't matter whether he is in a jungle or a city. So whether he is not doing his duty or he is doing his duty, it won't matter to him. So because from that point of view, from his person, because he is already self-satisfied, for him externals don't matter. Then Krishna is going to argue, therefore, then he should act in such a way that will benefit others. Because now he doesn't have anything more to achieve. He is already self-realized. So then let him act in a way that will benefit others.
Tasmad asaktah satatam karyam karma samachara asakto hi acharam karma paramapnoti purushah.
Therefore, without being attached to the fruits of activities, one should act as a matter of duty. For by working without attachment, one attains the Supreme.
Yes. Tasmad asaktah satatam. Therefore, now that a person is self-satisfied, he should maintain his self-satisfaction by staying attached always. So, detached always. Karyam karo. Tasmad asaktah satatam. Karyam karma. Let him do his activity. If he acts with detachment, asaktohi acharan karma, param apnoti purushah. He will attain the Supreme Person. So, here again Krishna is referring to himself in the third person. First person is I, second person is you, third person is he. So he is referring to himself as the Supreme Person. He will attain the Supreme Person. Because Krishna has not yet revealed bhakti and his position as the Supreme Lord. Krishna will actually explain his position as the Supreme Lord for the first time in the Gita in the fourth chapter. In that section of Yada Yada Hi Dharmasya. So here I think he will attain the Supreme Person. So the real purpose, the real source of liberation is not external activity or inactivity, but it is internal attachment or detachment. So, if we are internally attached, like we discussed earlier in Karmendriyani Sanyamya, external inactivity will not help us much. On the other hand, if we are externally detached, if we are internally attached, if we are externally active, it doesn't matter. So now, this same principle was used by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur to discourage Nirjan Bhajan. Prabhupada will talk about this in the fifth chapter, initial verses, because there also the notion is there that the more advanced a devotee becomes, the more he becomes inactive. Because he is just absorbed in hearing and chanting. That's fine. It's true. Hearing chanting is the highest devotional activity. But there is a higher principle than hearing and chanting also. What is that principle? The principle is to please Krishna. Samsiddhim haritoshanam. So if Krishna wants us to do other services and we think I will hear and chant, then that will not be very pleasing to Krishna. So the highest principle is not a particular limb of devotional service, but the highest principle is the pleasure of Krishna. So, yes, surely Krishna doesn't want us just to be running around doing many things and not hear and chant. But Krishna doesn't want us just to be hearing and chanting and not doing any practical services, because he would like to have more and more souls come and hear and chant about him. So therefore, asakto hi acharan karma paramapnoti purushah. If one can work with detachment, then one will attain the Supreme Person. So now, how can we at our level work with detachment? There are several ways. One practical thing is that we try to at least mentally offer the fruits of our services to Krishna and the senior Vaishnavas. And practically, we connect the devotees whom we are cultivating with other seniors also, other devotees also. We should not have a sense of possessiveness. We can have a sense of protectiveness, but not possessiveness. Protectiveness means we can choose whom we should let those whom we are guiding to associate with. You know, if some people are faith damagers, then we can tell them, please don't associate with them. But there's a difference between protectiveness and possessiveness. Possessiveness means you are mine and nobody else's. Protectiveness means, okay, don't associate with these people because this association will damage you. But these are the devotees whom you can associate with. So like that always, a devotee, whatever service he is doing, he should try to share his glory in whatever he does. You know, by giving credit wherever it is possible to others, acknowledging it. Of course, the credit is due to others because no, we cannot do anything ourselves alone. But we should acknowledge it. You know, I was recently going through a book. So in the acknowledgement section, the author writes, the first acknowledgement is to me, because I worked so hard to write the book. This is the antithesis of humility. Such positive. Actually, the author name is already there on the front of the book. You know, he doesn't have to acknowledge himself. So, actually, if we see Krishnas, Kaviraj Goswami and others, you know, they are at, in every end, every chapter end, you know, they are acknowledging that by the mercy of these Vaishnavas, I am able to write this book. So, actually, wherever possible, a devotee tries to offer credits, share the credits with others, and pass the glory to where it is actually due, which is ultimately Krishna. So, by that, paramapnoti purusha. You know, by doing our various services, you know, when we do karma yoga, so actually, ideally speaking, what should happen is that the yoga should come to us and the karma should go to Krishna. That means the karma and its fruit we offer to Krishna, and the inner fruit of that is yoga, the connection with Krishna. That is what comes to us. That is ideal. Otherwise, you know, we forget the yoga and then we get only the karma. Then that can be binding for us. So then Krishna will give, you know, in the next verse, example. He has said that you can attain the Supreme even by detachment. So how is that possible? He will give two examples, one in this verse and the next a couple of verses later.
One should act as a matter of duty. So what is this duty? Because we are talking about a self-satisfied person.
Yes. Karyam. See, karya, generally, the word karya does not just mean activity. If you look at the whole sense of the Bhagavad Gita, the word karya means duty. Anashita karma phalam karyam karma karotiya. So, karma is activity, karya is more like duty. So, now, this person, he can renounce whatever his varnashram duty was and be self-satisfied. But, if by doing whatever varnashram duty he was earlier doing, continuing that, if he can make spiritual advancement and set a good example for others, then that is what he is talking about. You know, for example, now in there are many devotees in ISKCON who have been around for 20, 30 years, and they may be very well situated in the outside world, but generally the spiritual leaders don't recommend them to completely renounce the world and move into the ashram, because they are situated in a very respectable position in society, and that will, as you will see, na buddhi bhedam janayet, that they will disturb the minds of others. On the other hand, if they maintain their position in society, if somebody is a CEO of a company, they just resigns as a CEO and takes on saffron, it will create a lot of disturbance in the minds of people in that circle. On the other hand, he stays as a CEO over there, but delegates most of the work to others. so that his assistants and other people are doing the work. And he uses the position and the respect that comes from the position to preach Krishna consciousness. He goes out and does seminars, or he does other activities, maybe other community welfare activities, spiritual community welfare activities. Then the position which he has acquired in society, instead of just renouncing that, if that position can be used to do wonderful service to Krishna, then why not? So one continues in the varnashram, but one is not attached. If a person were attached, then he will not be able to delegate the responsibility. One to earn more money. No. That is not the goal. One delegates the responsibilities, but one may not necessarily tell the world that I am retired, and because, you know, in the material world, to be retired is a very undignified thing. You know, means retired means what? You have become, basically, materialistic people think you should become retired, not when you become tired, but when you become good for nothing. You know, you become completely good for nothing for material life, then you can retire. So, or either you become good for nothing, or people think you are good for nothing, then you retire. So depending on social situation, the principles of Varnashram may be applied differently. Now, for those who have not yet achieved a big position in society, you know, for especially those who are young, they can actually achieve much more if they want to renounce the world and serve Krishna in that way. So the point over here is that Yukta Vairagya. Whatever way one can best serve Krishna, that's what one should do. So the external symbols of renunciation may or may not be there, depending on how Krishna can be served the best. Karmanaiva hi samsiddhim astita janakadaya loka sangraham evapi sampashyan kartum arhasi. Yes. Loka Sangraha. Loka Sangraha is like Loka Hita, the benefit of others. So for the benefit of others, you perform your duties. Karma Naiva Samsiddhi. By karma eva, by karma only is sahi. Samsiddhi. Siddhi is perfection, Samsiddhi is complete perfection. Asthita, they were situated in who? Janakadayaha. So, Janak and other kings. Now, this Janak is actually a post. There are many kings by the name Janak, and the most famous of them was the father of Mother Sita. Mother Sita was called as Janaki. So these kings by the name Janak were very illustrious souls, and they did their duties, but while doing their duties they would also always focus on spiritual life and self-realization. So there is a story about Janak Maharaj. You know, he had a great devotee whom he would patronize, and that devotee would stay in his, a saint who would stay in his kingdom, and every day he would do Harikatha. And Janak Maharaj would come and spend several hours every day hearing. But many times, Janak Maharaj would not come on time. And when he would not come on time, the sadhu would not start the katha. So, the other people started becoming. There are some Brahmins, caste Brahmins over there who said, you know, this sadhu, you know, he is attached to that king because the king patronizes him. But actually, he should be attached to the katha. He should start the katha on time. And Janak Maharaj would come and he would apologize whenever he would be late. And then he would sit and hear. So, the sadhu realized the mentality of these Brahmins. So, then one day, Janak Maharaj came late, and then as he was sitting, all other these caste Brahmins say, why is he coming late? He sat down and started hearing. And we started hearing. Then suddenly, in the middle of the class, some soldiers came and informed that there is a fire in the area of the palace. And Janak Maharaj just looked at them and he said, okay, you can do the needful. He just continued hearing. And then there's, but the fire is not only there in the area of the palace, it is also in the area of the Brahmins. Yes, go and extinguish the fire. And he continued hearing. But when the Brahmins heard this, they just forgot the hearing and ran away to protect their houses. And then, afterward, they extinguished the fire, they came back and they saw Janak Maharaj was peacefully hearing. So then they understood that actually, you know, he was not irresponsible with respect to his worldly duties. But when the worldly duties were done, and when he had a spiritual duty, he was attached to that. On the other hand, externally they were on time, but their attachment was there to their homes. So, you know, external and internals, we cannot very easily judge by what is what. So, now the sadhu was not also attached to the king, to the king's patronage, but he knew that the king was eager to hear. And that's why he was ready to wait for him to come so that he would start speaking. So, of course, we cannot claim that I'll be late and the speaker and everyone else should wait for me. But the idea is that sometimes it may be necessary for us to do our worldly duties. And when we have to do our worldly duties, it may be necessary that we have to adjust our spiritual obligation. But when the time is there for spiritual obligation, we try to wholeheartedly focus on that. The important thing is, where is our heart? Where is our attachment? Is it attached to our own protection and our own aggrandizement? Or is it to how best we can serve Krishna? Somebody may leave a class and also go just because he feels this is Krishna's property and I have to protect it. And somebody else may stay in the class and I think, you know, actually, you know, if Krishna is God, he will protect it. You know, so everything depends on consciousness. The important thing is, you know, what is our consciousness? Our consciousness is servant of Krishna. Now let me serve Krishna in this way. Let me just hear and chant. So, the principle is that we always have the attitude that I am the servant of Krishna, and based on that, however Krishna inspires us to serve, we will serve. And I think I mentioned the story earlier that once one devotee was attacked when during the Hindu-Muslim riots in 1992, when there was 26 bombs exploded in one day in Mumbai. So this devotee was in saffron. And then, you know, this huge gang of Muslims with all sorts of swords and weapons, they started coming. He started running. And they were just chasing him. And ran. And then there was a public toilet with urinal. And then he went and hid behind that. And they came running. And they came and he was completely hiding behind that. And they came, quickly they saw he was not there. Nobody was there. And they ran ahead. Then he came out. And then he... fortunately got a taxi and then went to Chopal temple. Then after he reached there, then he became more introspective. And then he went and met Radhanath Maharaj. And then he asked Maharaj that, Maharaj, you know, I just go and give so many classes that I'm not the body and the soul. But when I was attacked, I just ran away. Was this proper for me to do? So Maharaj said, it depends on your consciousness. It depends on your consciousness. If you think that, you know, if, you know, ultimately whatever is Krishna's will is going to happen, that is also okay. Let me surrender to Krishna's will. And if you think that, you know, I want to serve Krishna. If I want to serve Krishna, therefore I want to protect my body. So that you can serve Krishna. Then you can protect yourself. So it ultimately depends on consciousness. So, generally speaking, at our situation, it's best to... Because we may not be able to remember Krishna if we also die at such times. Now we may be remembering why is Krishna not protecting me rather than remembering Krishna per se. So we can try our best to protect ourselves. And it's not wrong to do that. The principle we see, devotional service is not just about being fixed in one's principles. But it's become being fixed in one's principles so that one can serve Krishna. Now we see Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, they actually converted to Islam. But they could have said, you know, yeah, we will never convert to Islam, we will never do this, we will never do that. Why? But, you know, they were so spiritually advanced, they could have tortured, even if they could have tolerated, even if they had been tortured. But they thought pragmatically. Pragmatically what? That let us convert and then we'll protect the Vaishnava temples over here. So that Vaishnavism will be protected. So that is perfectly okay. Because ultimately our goal is to further the mission of the Lord. Now Shivaji Maharaj, he was himself very religious, but even he knew that he had a mission. So he would come to temples and meet with saints and associate with them But then he had Harikatha going on, which he sponsored and supported the saints who were practicing, the saints and sadhus who were practicing spirituality. But he himself did his duty as a Kshatriya. On the other hand, if we see the history, Sambhaji Maharaj himself got involved in a lot of religious activities. And at one time he went somewhere in Goa, and there he was, you know, just with a few bunch of soldiers doing some rituals, because he was told by some Brahmins that if you do rituals at this place, it is very auspicious. And it was way up in the hills, and he had no army. And a Muslim general came with his army over there, and he was told, you know, he's coming. He said, no, who is going to come over here? This is like a mountainous area. And then he did just neglected the warning, continued his rituals. And then what happened? So suddenly this Muslim Khan came over there with a big army. And although at that time Shivaji Maharaj had built such a huge empire, at that time Shivaji Maharaj departed from this world, you know, his empire was bigger than Aurangzeb's empire. You know, it extended from Cuttack in the east to Attak in Pakistan. It is huge. So Chhatrapati, Sambhaji, such a big kingdom he had. But what happened? There were no soldiers to protect him. And he was arrested. And he was tortured, and he was eventually brutally killed. So the point is that a Kshatriya has his duties. A Kshatriya should also have time for hearing and chanting. But that is not the primary duty of a Kshatriya. Primary duty of a Kshatriya is to fight. And you know, a Brahmana should be dependent on the Supreme Lord. But Kshatriya cannot say, I am dependent on the Supreme Lord. Kshatriya, his dependence is to use his sword and fight. So, actually, the dharma will vary according to Varna. And Krishna consciousness is not an impractical philosophy. Not an impractical philosophy. You know, Prabhupada said that when some people came and rioted in New Vrindavan, Prabhupada said, you know, we should go to the police. And they said, no, the police are also on their side. Then Prabhupada said, you should get your guns. We should have guns with you. Because in America, according to the laws, people can have guns. We should protect ourselves. So, Krishna consciousness means that we depend on Krishna, ultimately speaking. But when we say we depend on Krishna, we also depend on the intelligence that Krishna has given us. We don't just give up our intelligence and think that I simply depend on Krishna. No, the whole process of bhakti is active. It's not passive. So, the way in which we depend on Krishna will vary depending on time, place, circumstance. So now Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his songs, you know, he will say that, my dear Lord, I will just sit like a dog outside your house and I will bark at whoever comes, and the burden of my maintenance is yours. You know, he just talks about complete surrender. But then if you look at his life, he was practically sleeping only 3-4 hours and working throughout the night. Isn't it? So you may wonder, you know, if he's, everything is dependent on the Lord, then why is he working so hard? No, actually he works hard because he wants to fulfill the mission of the Lord. So, in we have this utsaha nishchayat dhairyat. So, a devotee has utsaha for his service. And he has dhairya, patience for the fruit of the service. Unfortunately, we have utsaha for the fruit of the service and dhairya for the service. That is not dependence on Krishna. Dependence on Krishna means we are enthusiastic about doing our service, and then we are dependent on Krishna for the fruits. But rather, you know, we are attached to the fruit, we are enthusiastic for the fruits. We want the fruits, I should be able to give very, very good classes. You know, but we are very lazy about studying scripture. You know, that is not the thing. Either we sit on a bed, we start giving classes, and we wonder, why is Krishna not giving me an intelligence? That is not dependence on Krishna. We have to prepare properly. So, dependence on Krishna means that we do our duty and depend on Krishna for the results. Not that we depend for our duty also on Krishna. No. So, and that's why to understand Vaishnava's activities, we need to see, or rather to understand the import of Dharma, we have to see both scripture and the life of a Vaishnava. If we study only scripture, we will get a partial understanding. If we study only the life of a Vaishnava, we may mistake him to be just a materialist, because he is also so busy. So, when we have both, when we study scripture, and then we study the life of a Vaishnava, then, dharmasya tattvam nihitam guhayam mahajano yenagata sapanta. So, we need to see devotees who live scripture. But, Even if we see devotees who live scripture, if we don't have vision according to scripture, we'll not be able to understand. That's why there has to be a harmony of both. Then, how scripture is to be lived in our life, we can learn. And then we can move forward. So, Yamuna Mataji was once giving a class. He said that when they had come to India with Srila Prabhupada, and then it was Ekadashi, they had come to some big patron's house, and Prabhupada had this system that if anybody invited him for prasad at their place, then he said, I'll come to your house for prasad if you become a life member. And like that, Prabhupada would make many life members. And of course, they would make sure that they offer food and everything. The culture was still there. So, at one place, when they went, and then they saw that these people were not devotees, but some devotees had gone earlier and offered the food. So, one of the devotees said, no, I will not take this food, because it's not cooked for Krishna. And Prabhupada said, you must take this food. And then Prabhupada insisted like that, and then we realized that to become Krishna conscious was actually not a ritual, but an adventure. Because to be Krishna conscious each time will vary according to time, place and circumstance. What should I do to be Krishna conscious? When we were with Prabhupada, then we understood that Krishna consciousness was not simply mechanical or ritualistic or predictable. Yes, it was dependent on how the devotee felt was the best way to serve Krishna at that particular time. So that's why Krishna consciousness is very dynamic. And the same devotee may respond to the same situation in different ways. Or the similar situation in different ways, depending on how he feels can best serve Krishna. So now, after giving this example of Janak Maharaj, he will tell about the principle. What is the principle? Yes, a person who is detached, for him personally it makes no difference whether he is working or not working. But it makes a big difference to the world. That's what he will tell in the next verse. Famous verse which Prabhupada would often quote. Yad-yad acharati sreshtas tat-tad evetaro janah sayat pramanam kurute lokastad anuvartate. Yes. This was the verse which Prabhupada would often quote when he would meet people who are influential in society. Like when he met George Harrison, he quoted this verse. So, Sreshtha means one who is, ideally speaking, pursuing Shreya. But in Kali Yuga, Sreshtha are not necessarily pursuing Shreya. In fact, those who are pursuing Shreya are not necessarily considered Sreshtha. Those who are pursuing prayer are considered Sreshtha. But still, the idea is that Sreshtha, those who are considered respectable and famous in society, whatever they do, common people will follow. It's a universal principle, and that's why in life, all of us need role models. All of us need role models. And if we look at outside society also, you know, even 50 years ago, the role models of people where national leaders like Gandhi or Nehru or Lal Lajpat Rai or Subhash Chandra Bose or whatever, you know, now they might have got all their philosophies wrong, but at least they were thinking of the well-being of society. Now if you think of people's role models, probably it's like somebody like Aditya Mittal or some industrialists or some film stars or some movie stars or some cricketers. So, now, if you see at that time also, this time also, they are not spiritual role models. But even with respect to material role models, we can see the degradation that is happening. And because of that, you will see that the people become more and more selfish. Everybody needs some role model whom they feel they can emulate. And one of the advantages of Krishna consciousness movement, among the many, is that, you know, we have living role models of those who practice spirituality. Ravindra Saruparo, he writes that many times he goes to Christian colleges or Christians to preach, and at that time they ask this common question, you know, if you say that the teachings of Jesus and Krishna are the same, then why did you choose Krishna? So then he says the safe answer that we can give, you can, in the initial stage only you can tell that, actually this is only basic principle, and that is advanced principle, but that can alienate. This is the same answer again. He says, within the Christian tradition that I made, I did not find any role models. I did not find any living examples who could inspire me. And, you know, if we think of our own lives before we were introduced to Krishna consciousness, now, did we ever think of the priests who would come to do some pujas as role model? Never, you know. They just there to come to do something and then go back. I remember that, you know, there was a priest who would come to our house, and my grandfather was, so this priest was also working in a bank. So my grandfather, he appreciated him that, not because he was a priest, oh, you're also working in a bank. So, people's values are so skewed, not only of the person who is a priest, he is doing something else, but others also appreciate him, not because he is a priest, but because he is doing something worldly and productive. So, that is very unfortunate. And this is a great advantage, and you know, that we have role models. And one of the things that our movement is lacking in America is role models. You know, we have many great souls, but they are like very advanced. We are 20, 30, 40 years practicing Krishna consciousness. And then the one intermediate generation is missing. So, because of that, the philosophy is there, the culture is there, the great souls are there. But people feel, yeah, I cannot become like them. Now, I need somebody like somebody who is somewhat like me. You know, maybe as a, either as a brahmachari or as a grahastha, somebody like me. That's why role models are very important. And now, of course, devotees from India are going there and settling down. And then they are creating role models which people can follow. So, whenever we are also preaching to someone, we have to see, based on the talk of that person, who is his role model. You know, that, and for ourselves also, you know, we can think, who are our role models? And we may not model ourselves entirely according to anyone, because all of us are individuals. So we may not actually externally behave like our role model. That would be imitation, which might often be cheap. But we can at least understand, these are the values that I would like to hold sacred. This is the focus that I would like to have in my life, whatever I do. So that way we can all advance in Krishna consciousness. So on one side, Krishna is telling here just a principle that whatever great souls do, common people follow. But the implication is that Arjuna, you are a great soul. Now, why? Because Arjuna is king. Now, indirectly, now can we infer and say that we are great souls? No, we are not great souls, but we have been given great responsibilities by the great souls. And therefore, all of us, we to some extent already are leaders. You know, it may be even a housewife, she is the leader for her children. And she becomes a role model. Okay, not in terms of how what all she is doing, but just, you know, she teaches the culture, she teaches the values, she teaches everything. So every one of us as a leader, we may have different spheres of influence. And actually Krishna is telling each one of us over here that, you know, we should act in ways that become exemplary for others, that will inspire others to lead a life of values. So, to the extent we do this, to that extent we make advancement. Now, actually, atheism spreads not because of atheists, but because of theists. Why? Because atheists really don't have much of a philosophy. How can you prove the non-existence of God? You can at least say, chant Hare Krishna and you'll be able to experience God. You cannot say chant something and you will be able to prove the non-existence of God. So atheism, even if it's a, first of all, there's not much philosophy, but along with philosophy, there is no practice. So atheism spreads, especially when the theists misbehave. If you look at Indian history also, you know, it has always been a mystery for me. The Muslims did so much havoc in India during their reign over here. But Prabhupada seems to be remarkably non-critical of Muslims. And Prabhupada is very critical of the caste Brahmins. Why? Because no matter how much the Muslims did devastation, no, actually, they would just come devastation, do the devastation and go. But the why people converted or why people lost faith, whether it was to Islam or to Jainism or Buddhism, was because the the Brahmins were exploitative. Brahmins were selfish. And similarly in the West, if you see, it was the whole Protestant movement started because Martin Luther and Calvin and others felt that the Catholic Church priests were corrupt. And it was true, to some extent they were corrupt. And to a large extent, you know, people's faith in God is determined by how those who represent God behave. And if those who represent God misbehave, then people lose faith. And if you know, if those who represent God become fanatical and they create violence, then people feel better. Let's not worry about God at all. And nowadays, a rapidly growing school of thought in the West is called as apathism. It's not atheism, it's apathism. Apathy means, I don't bother. You know, we have enough problems in this world. Why are you fighting about what things are like in the next world? Okay, so they think that religions, they add to the problems of this world. So therefore, I don't care whether God exists or not. Agnosticism is means I don't know whether God exists. Apathism means I just don't care. So why is this happening? Because, you know, there is fanaticism in religions. People fight over small issues and they create conflicts. So it's extremely important that devotees have good behavior. When there is good behavior, people are attracted, people are inspired. You know, one of the quotes of these apathists is, you know, "Oh God, please save me from your followers." So people come and hound them. You know, "Do this, do this. If you don't do this, you're going to go to hell," and this and that. That's a very alienating kind of preaching. So, especially as modern times are progressing, the preaching at the level of fear doesn't work. And if you tell people that you will go to hell if you do this, people will tell you only go to hell. You know, "I don't believe in you. You get out of my life." So those who continue to preach at the level of fear, they just simply alienate people. That's why those who are representing God have to be very, very responsible in their behavior. And Krishna has, you know, we may want it or not want it, but we have already got that responsibility. And now we just have to come up to it. Because by our very life, you know, people come to know that we are devotees. And then people observe us. So to the extent we can set a good example, it can help people to come closer and closer to Krishna. Now, good example, what all does it mean? First of all, it means just basically kind behavior. You know, gentle, kind, not rude, not offensive, not arrogant. It's kind, gentle behavior. Like, whenever I go for these Sankalp camps, one of the things which all the boys everywhere tell in feedback. Everybody says we like the kirtan, some boys may say we like kirtan, some boys may say we like the lectures, some boys may say that, you know, we like the, what is prasad, of course. But one thing which most of the boys really touch at the heart is, they say by the very humble and caring behavior of our seniors. "No, these seniors, they are from IITs and NIT, such big college, but they are so kind." And as this boy says, we contrast these seniors with the seniors who ragged us in college. They seem to be like different species. So that's what touches their heart. So good behavior of devotees is extremely powerful preaching. So good behavior doesn't mean that we have to be able to answer every question that we are asked. But good behavior just means, you know, we are kind, gentle, humble, caring. And these are universal human values that everyone appreciates. And of course, once these values are there, then of course there is selflessness, detachment, knowledge, devotion. These come higher. You know, there are human values, then there are spiritual values. So people respect even human values. Often they respect human values more than spiritual values also. So if devotees have this good behavior, they have human values, they have spiritual values, then the amount of preaching that they can do just by their actions is amazing. You know, once I was in Chowpatty and my father had come to meet me there. So, I was supposed to go for lunch together in Chowpatty temple, but I got late. So when I got a little late, at that time, my father just went for prasad. And you know, they have the system of a guard and everything, you don't allow people for prasad. So the guard just stopped. And then Govind Prabhu was there, and Govind Prabhu said, "Hey, let him come in. And then afterwards my father told us, that stopped me, but then one Prabhu allowed me. And who was that Prabhu? Then I asked. And I asked Govind Prabhu. And Govind Prabhu said, you know, I looked at him, I thought he looked similar to you. I thought he must be your father. So I allowed him inside. So then I asked Prabhuji, Prabhuji, you know, you meet so many thousands of people. How do you remember? Just, he said, you know, actually, he says, devotees, Brahmachari's parents, they are already so hurt by their sons becoming Brahmachari. You know, the very least we can do is not hurt them more. So, so, this is a small thing, but it indicates the sensitivity and the caring nature. So rules are there, and rules are important. You know, rules have to be applied with compassion. Rules have to be applied with sensitivity. One, another reason why people become alienated for religion is because the rules are imposed without any sensitivity, without any concern for the person or his situations. So devotees' good behavior can preach in such amazing ways. It can touch people's hearts. Of course, this can never be a substitute for philosophy, but it helps philosophy go deep. Like Radhanath Maharaj often says, the philosophy is like the product, culture is like the packaging. If the packaging is not good, then people are not attracted to the product, people do not purchase the product. So unfortunately, if you see, there are many other religions and many other organizations, they have excellent culture and no philosophy. But still people are attracted. Why? Because the packaging is good. And that's typically true about Western culture. Western culture, you know, things work so smoothly. You know, you never have any power cut, you never have any water shortage, you know, the trains go on time, the planes go on time. And generally when Indians go to the West, they are very impressed by that. Although, the philosophy that it is based on is crass exploitation. But the culture is that way. I am not saying that the culture is attractive in terms of human relationships. But culture in terms of just the way things work. So the point is, culture is very important. So now we'll just go quickly through the next three verses and we'll complete this section. So now in the next three verses, Krishna is giving his own example of how he is setting, he is doing his duty to set an example for others. Name parthasti kartavyam trishulokeshu kinchana nana vaptam avaptavyam varta eva cha karmani. Yes. Yes. So earlier we discussed, if you want something, then you have a duty. If you don't want anything, you don't have a duty. So Krishna says, I don't need anything. I'm Atma Ram, self-satisfied. But still I'm doing my duty. Now, in this purport, Prabhupada gives a very long quote. And sometimes, we may read a quote and we may just wonder, why is this quote here? And Prabhupada may not explicitly state also. So actually, there are 8 lines in that quote. And the only relevant line is natasya karyam karanam cha vidyate. So we have to, whenever we see, sometimes we may feel that Prabhupada's purport are just repetitious. Same thing is being said again and again. But we have to see for what purpose it is being said. So then when we understand that point, okay, it is being said for this purpose, then we can see the connections. So now Krishna will brilliantly turn around Arjuna's argument in the next two verses. Arjuna's argument was in 1.40, 41, 42 he said that if I don't do my duty, if I fight this war, then all the people will be, so many people will be killed and their wives will become widows. And then there will be Varna Sankara. So now, Krishna will tell, if you don't fight, then there will be Varna Sankara. Just turn around the argument completely. Na yadi yaham na varteyam jatu karmanya tandrit. Is that the verse?
Yes.
Yatu karmanya tandritaha mama vartamanu vartante manushyaha partha sarvashaha.
If I ever fail to engage in carefully performing prescribed duties, Uparsana, certainly all men would follow my path.
Yes. Mama vartamanu vartante. Now this will come in 4.11 also. Manushyaha partha sarvashaha. People will follow my path. So here Krishna is talking about not just the philosophical path which is talking on that verse. But he is saying, practically they will do what I will do. So if you see, you know, Krishna stole butter, he danced with the gopis, but that was not when he was a king. Once he accepted leadership, You know, he was very responsible. Every day he would wake up in the morning and he would do meditation and he would give charity to the Brahmins and he would protect the citizens. He was very responsible. So, Tandritaha. Tandritaha means very carefully, with absorption. I'll do my duty. Otherwise, people will follow and they will become ruined. Next one.
Utsideyurime loka nakuryat karma chedaham sankarasya chakartasyam upahanyamima praja.
Yes. Yes. Sankarasya chakartasyam. If I do not do my duty, then that will lead to Varna Sankara. Now how will that happen? See, Krishna is telling that, Arjuna was arguing that if we fight, all the protectors of society will be killed. The protectors of society will be killed, then the women will become polluted and there will be Varna Sankara. Krishna is arguing that if you don't fight, then the exploiters of society will continue exploiting society. And that will also lead to Varna Sankara. In fact, that will be a worse thing. Because if somebody is a protector, and even if he lays down his life for the sake of protection, he is not successful in protecting. But still that becomes the example. Others will rise to protect. But if the protectors abandon their duty and leave the society for the exploiters, then nobody will protect. Rather, everybody will want to become an exploiter. See, again, it's a point of example. You know, if the protectors may even lay down their life and be unsuccessful. But if they set the example of being protector, others will want to be protectors. But if protectors abandon their duty and they just leave everything to exploiter, then people will think, why should I be a protector? Let me be an exploiter only. And that will lead to Varna Sankara. So therefore, he says, if you want to avoid Varna Sankara, fight. So this is Krishna's expertise. You take the same argument and using the same argument, you arrive at exactly opposite conclusion of what the opponent is arriving at. Like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would do that. You take the same point and argue different ways. So Krishna, of course, that was more of fun or just exhibition of one scholarship. But here Krishna is doing that, taking same points but completely refuting Arjuna. And in the next verse, Arjuna has some residual doubts. But will I not get some karmic reactions by acting in this way? So that, the difference between karma yoga and karma kanda. That will be explained by Krishna in the next section. We will discuss that tomorrow. So thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki, Gaur Premanandi.